Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, all you HR and people ops leaders. Welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us. We're your HR analytics dashboard for small to medium-sized businesses, allowing you to pull all your data from all your different HR systems, HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance, Glassdoor, you name it, into one real-time, streamlined, centralized HR dashboard. And if you want, you can actually go to employeecycle.com now to create your free account so that you can test it out and become that data-driven HR leader. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have an awesome guest. So I would hope that you can help me welcome to the podcast Shane Foss, founder and CEO of Hooray Health. And today we're going to discuss how and why you should provide health insurance to non-full-time employees. Shane, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bruce.
Go, Shane.
Wow, that's the best intro I've ever had, I think. Thank you. Ah.
That's how you should feel every day, Shane.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad to be here.
So, Shane, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. And if we could kick this podcast off like we kick off every other podcast, which is telling the audience how you ended up in the wonderful world of HR, and then give us a little bit of information about Hooray Health.
Sure. So I've had a long journey from northern Minnesota. I'm in Dallas, Texas now, started off in the military in health and healthcare, working clinically in surgery. And then when I got out of the military, I started off in medical device sales, orthopedics to be exact, and then kind of worked my way up in the companies and ended up with a health insurance startup that that offered surgical bundles to large self-funded employers. And I just really fell in love with the health insurance market. And when we sold that company, we stayed on for another 6 months. And the CEO, which was a good friend of mine, we started a consulting group. And I came up with the idea for Hooray Health. And so it's been probably 30 years in the making, but I'm here, and man, I'm loving it. I'm very passionate about what we're doing. Hooray Health is we're a young company. We're 2.5 years old. We are an insurance product that is geared towards hourly, part-time, contingent workforce contractors to take care of their basic needs. And our plans start at $99. It's very affordable for the member. It's very affordable for the employer to offer this benefit. And, we took it a little step farther by creating our own provider network. And we created a very unique provider network so we could manage the issues that happen today in healthcare, which is the balance billing and really the bad debt that's generated from that. And so we created our own provider network of retail clinics and urgent cares. CVS is a partner of ours. Walmart, we have 14 of the top 20 urgent care businesses in the United States. And we have fixed pricing. And so we're the only network that can offer that. So we have a $25 copay for any of the services that are available under the roof of that provider. And we use technology to back it up to create this incredible product that allows the part-time contingent workforce access to their basic health care needs.
Got it. That's awesome. So now let's go into defining what a non-full-time employee looks like. I mean, there's so many startups and so many different types of companies that are hiring a lot of people who aren't full-time in W-2, whether it's Uber, Lyft, Caviar, a lot of caregiving organizations. So could you give us an explanation of when you say non-full-time employee, how do you define that?
Yeah, so anybody working less than 31 hours a week is considered a part-time employee. If you have 1099 workforce, contract workforce, similar to what Uber is or Lyft. So they typically do not have access to health insurance. And so that's our core market. That's who we focus on. There's this overwhelming growth in this market. If you you look at the Fortune 500 companies over the next 10 years, they project that it's going to be a 30% growth in the part-time contingent workforce. So that gig economy, the 1099, the part-time, you know, it's just going to continue to grow. And we're in the tightest labor market in the U.S. has ever seen. So we need to figure something else out other than not offering health benefits.
And I'm assuming the reason why you wanted to discuss how and why employers should provide health benefits to non-full-time employees is because a lot of companies are currently not doing it, correct?
That is correct. If you look at the majority of companies, they're either unable or they don't see the value in offering health benefits to that part-time workforce. And, you know, if you look today, tightest job labor market in the history of the U.S., employers are really worried about three things. They're worried about how do I engage and retain that current talent? And so it's statistical fact that if you're offering that part-time employee benefits, that you have a 60% chance of keeping that person on three plus years working for you. So sometimes they'll just stay working part-time just for the access to the benefits, which is better for the organizations from a consistency standpoint. And the reason that consistency is important is because turnover costs right now are so high. So if you look at SHRM, they have a study out that shows that if you have an $8 an hour employee, their turnover cost for that employee on average is $3,500. I mean, that's huge when you start looking at some of these organizations that have, you know, 20, 30,000 part-time workforce, you know, and they're not offering any benefits. So you're talking, you know, $100 million a year when you're looking at 100% turnover, which sounds like a ridiculous number, but it's a fact. And then the other part of it is as more and more companies become expanding, you know, that part-time workforce, guess what? Attracting new talent is incredibly hard. And the number one way to do that is through healthcare benefits. Statistically, you know, 95%, if the people that are looking right now, if they're going to make the choice over health benefits, even if the salary is a little bit lower. So it's a very inexpensive way to differentiate yourself and to improve your, you know, your pool of employees that you're bringing in.
So you just gave our listeners a lot of reasons and practical reasons for why they should provide these non-full-time employees benefits. But with all that being said and all the proven research out there, at the beginning, you still said that most companies don't see the value. So what value are they looking for?
Well, they're looking for that, really that turnover cost, right? I think that when you really dig in and talk to most HR professionals, they get it, they understand it, and they're on board. The challenge is, it's a transient population a lot of times, right? So you have to sit, you know, you really have to focus on getting, you know, time and effort on getting those people engaged. So our company, we really focus on taking that burden off or assisting in that burden with the employer, from a marketing standpoint, from an enrollment standpoint, from a messaging. And so, so a lot of them have just, you know, from a priority standpoint, they look at, okay, how do we take care of our full-time? The part-time is kind of an afterthought. And if you look at 10 years ago, most of these large corporations offered a limited medical, you know, mini med benefit to their employers. But when the ACA came around, they, you know, they were worried about what was going to happen and their liability. So they dropped them and they really never came back to offering a benefit. So it's not a foreign concept. It's just something that's changed over the last 10 years.
My previous startup was an applicant tracking system, and we specifically focused on the high volume, high turnover hourly space. So we work with retail, restaurant, hospitality, franchises, etc. And one of the shocking things, although it probably wasn't that shocking, but one of the most fascinating things that I found was that as we were looking to sell the software, we quickly realized that a lot of the hourly employers we were talking to didn't necessarily want to invest into their hourly employers or hourly employees based off of what you just said about them being transient, high volume hiring, high turnover, a lot of people willing to leave a job for a quarter more per hour. And so is there any backing or support and logic behind a lot of companies not looking to provide this type of benefit for employees who they believe historically or have historically not stayed that long? And so they believe that in the future, even if you give more benefits, the outcome wouldn't be different.
Yeah. So I think that mindset has been changing. So we've talked to a lot of large and medium sized companies that focus in, you know, or that have a large portion of their population in this part-time world. And they want to do something. I think the challenge is, from a data standpoint, they need to validate it, right? So what we've done is we've gone in and they're not participating financially to help or subsidize it. And so it's going 100% on the employee. But what we're looking at internally right now is looking at it. If that employee buys it, how long are they staying? Is it longer than what the average employee is? And so we've got a couple groups out there that we've been working on for a while now to kind of validate those processes. But we're this year, we've got a couple large groups that we're onboarding that we'll be able to get even on a larger scale, get that feedback to see. And then I think once we get there and we can show that we can reduce that turnover by even 10%, it would be in their best interest to allocate, even if they paid for 10, 15% of the plan, that there's enough benefit to offset that cost.
So let's help our listeners create a game plan, starting with identifying whether or not this is right for their organization, then trying to come up with some type of use case or strong plan to get stakeholder buy-in. And then after that, figure out how to track the ROI on doing this. That sound good?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So let's start with, how does an HR leader, people ops leader at a company with a lot of employees that are not full-time really start to think about this and figure out, where do I start if this is right for our organization, and do we have the budget for this?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing is looking at, just asking yourself, how important are that part-time workforce for you? Okay. And is your turnover high enough to justify putting any type of resources, even if you're not paying for the plan or a portion of the plan, just even, you know, using your HR resources to, you know, to facilitate the enrollment of a plan. So I think you gotta look at it there. But most of these places are going to have 100% to 150% turnover. I think you can look at a lot of organizations that are doing something different. Like if you look at Chipotle, if you look at Verizon, Fossil, these are companies that offer, you know, full-time benefits to their part-time employees, or they have a specific part-time employee plan. And, you know, they're thought leaders in the industry. They do really well. And I think that it gives them a competitive advantage when you're looking at recruiting. So I think just even looking in your vertical, if you would, who are your competitors and what are they doing? So I think that's a great place to start.
All right. So now I've done that. I think that we would have a competitive edge by doing this. I believe that we could potentially decrease turnover to an acceptable rate, or rate where we believe we need to be based off of industry comps. Now I need to sell this into the stakeholders, CFO, COO, CEO, whoever I need to sell this to. What does that look like? As a listener, give me the language and the playbook that I can provide so that I can get the buy-in.
So I think the buy-in is really focused around two things: engaging and retaining our current talent, and then attracting new talent. And with that conversation, you can have a financial prediction on lowering your turnover from a goal standpoint, right? Our goal on engaging and retaining our company talent, attracting new employees, will be to extend their, you know, their employment with us, which reduces turnover. And, you know, even put a small target, say, look, if we can reduce it by 5%, right? I mean, start small. 5% on one of the companies that we're working with is $5 million. I mean, $5 million to the bottom line. And that's a, you know, you're not going to spend $5 million on time to put the plan together. So I think that's where your ROI comes from, is that really that turnover cost.
All right. So I am head of HR at a 50 location pizza spot. And we got all these people and all these different locations cooking, slicing, delivering pizza. As the head of HR, I deeply care about each and every one of my employees. Maybe some of the people in the C-suite don't really care that much about the hourly employers or employees or how long they're going to stay, because they just have been brought up in this game knowing in their heart that they believe that regardless of what you give, people are going to come and they're going to leave. It's a part-time job. It's a high school job. It's a stopgap. Whether you got laid off and they need to do something else, it's a job for kids, whatever their beliefs are, how do you think an HR person should be able to overcome that barrier?
So if you look at who your audience is, it's going to be the CFO is going to make that decision. So it's going to be a financial decision. So pizza is a great place because 80% of your sales are going to come on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Okay. So those are the 3 days that your delivery people are the key to your success. And starting on Friday, that starts at 6 o'clock at night, 5:30 at night. So this is going to be a second job for somebody. So that person, if I can keep that good driver that shows up, that has a, you know, has a good driving record, is there, we know we're the second job. And he's coming there because, hey, we've got health benefits that he's utilizing because he doesn't have it as his current location. It's going to make a difference. So again, going to the CFO, analyzing it and saying, look, our turnover is 100%. Some of the things that we think we can do from a hiring standpoint is by offering benefits, we think that we can reduce that by, you know, 5, 10%. And as a CFO, it's a pretty easy thing to do if you can see that it's going to save enough money to go that goes straight to the bottom line. I think that's what you got to look at. You got to look at, again, how does it affect the bottom line, especially if you're not paying for anything. But the other challenge with a pizza place like that, they're competing against Domino's, Pizza Hut, Papa John's. There is a ton of businesses that they're competing against now, including, you know, the delivery services, right? You're competing against all of them for drivers. So the attracting new employees and retaining even means more to these guys. And I think most of the CFOs and CEOs, owners of those businesses, understand that we talk to, especially a smaller business like that, that, you know, if they have 50 locations, they're going to have, you know, 1,500 people. So they understand that turnover cost and the difficulty to attract talent. So I think, again, it's going back to that employee turnover cost. How do we reduce that? And then the other part of the equation is, how are we attracting the level of talent that will be able to become assistant managers, managers, and eventually, you know, store and regional managers for me if I own 50 locations, because they're looking for, you know, they need quality candidates, which is the number one thing that people look at is, are you offering benefits?
One of the things you mentioned in this scenario was how this made up pizza place would compete with delivery services. So now let's bring it back to a company that is a hybrid of knowledge workers and hourly or part-time employees, companies like an Uber, a Lyft, a TaskRabbit. It seems as though a lot of people who are working for these services are trying to fight for these types of benefits and or looking to unionize so that they can band together and actually get more, not just benefits, but just employee worker rights in general. So for those type of companies that see this as a pure entrepreneurial opportunity for the people that are working with and or for them, example, Lyft, Uber, TaskRabbit, etc., how do companies that are following in their footsteps with these hybrid tech-enabled business models where they use software as a platform to connect people to do all these types of tasks but are not W-2'd, how do you see them doing this and what's the ROI there?
So by giving them access, their 1099 contractors to an affordable health benefit, it gives them, again, the competitive advantage in the hiring process if you're able to give them an affordable health benefit. And what I mean by give, I mean give them access, because they're not going to pay for it. They're, because they're already in enough trouble as it is trying to fight with, you know, California and New York right now, because like you said, they're trying to unionize. But if you look at a traditional, let's say a trucking company, they have, majority of them are 1099 independent contractors. Well, we can actually assign the health plan to the trucking company, and then they can, in turn, we can offer the product to their 1099 drivers, even though they're contractors, and they can get a lower price, they can get more access. And so that's a competitive advantage, because a lot of these companies, especially trucking companies, they don't offer anything. They want to keep that separation. They don't want any employment, co-employment questions. But, you know, the reality is, if you look at what the IRS code is on a 1099 contractor, they're very clear on how that looks. So I think that's an opportunity as well. And we do work with a couple trucking companies, and we work with a MLM company, multi-level management, where you have 1099 salespeople that sell a product. And what people, they use it as the access point where, oh, if I work for you, I have access to this health benefit, which means that I want to work for you and I want to stay there, even if I have another job or I'm doing something else as well. And we can sell to individuals as well, by the way. So like an Uber or a Lyft who may not want that co-employment view, we can go in and offer our product to individuals where, you know, there's no employee, you know, even, you know, there's no visibility from anybody as an employer-employee relationship, right? It's just that it's an association health plan, if you would.
And so I'm sure everyone who is listening to this is thinking, how affordable can you actually make this? Because when it comes to employee benefits, a lot of times it really just comes down to costs. So what can that potentially look like for the employer?
So it's funny you say that, because what separates us is we really focus on three things. We focus on accessibility, simplicity, and then the third thing, and a lot of times the most important thing, is the affordability. And so our basic healthcare plan, where you can see anybody in our network, provider network, five times a year per member, you get annual wellness, immunization, female visit, you get lab tests, MRI, then you get a $5,000 accident policy, which takes care of basically all of your needs, no deductible. And so if you break your arm, it'll pay up to $5,000. But, we can do that for $110 a month. If you make a little bit more money and you can afford a catastrophic, and that's what you're looking for, if you want to get pregnant or if you're worried about cancer or you want some surgical coverage, we work with a medical cost share company that is a non-insurance product, but for very, very inexpensive. But we can offer that for an extra $150 a month for an individual, and it'll give you all of that catastrophic coverage you need. So we can do a multitude of things very inexpensively.
And then last question in this section, where do you see the world moving to with so many companies, especially tech-enabled companies leveraging part-time or 1099 employees, how do you think this will affect the economy and health insurance moving forward in general?
I think that what you're going to see in the near future is a lot more pricing transparency tools that are trying to drive utilization on a cash basis, because I think we're at a tipping point right now in the sense that the, you know, Blue Crosses and Uniteds, the, you know, the big guys, the BUCAs, have really kind of priced themselves out of the market unless you're with a large self-funded employer. So people today, you know, 75% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. Well, last year, Milliman study showed that the average family premium, annualized premium, was $28,166 for health insurance. So, you know, it's just not sustainable. So I think that what you'll see is a lot more technology-enabled opportunities or products to direct connect patients, providers, and then you're going to get a lot more people that are just going out to the market and getting a large critical illness or accident policy to take care of that potential catastrophic issue that they have. I think you're going to see more plans going to what we're doing, which is just really covering the basics for you at a low price. And then that way you're able to get the pricing you need, get the coverage that you need just to cover your basic healthcare needs. So I think that it's going to be an interesting 10 years with technology. And, hopefully we'll get to where that you're going to be able to get a little correlation between cost and quality in healthcare, but it's definitely not there yet.
Awesome. So now we're going to move to my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. The real question. Everyone who's ever listened to this podcast before knows I love bread pudding. So the real question is, Shane, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I love bread pudding. I like it with raisins. I like it hot. And I like a lot of sauce on it.
Awesome. I love all that. The only answer that's acceptable on this podcast is yes, I love it. So, boom, check there. All right. The random question. We've been talking a lot about part-time hourly workers. What was the most random part-time job you've ever had?
Most random. Probably selling docks for my neighbor, where I grew up in northern Minnesota. My neighbor, Al Engel, had his own little dock business that he would weld and build docks for the lake that we lived on. So I would paint them, and then he was a real shy guy, and I would sell them. So at age 10, I was selling docks to people.
Wow.
And so that was probably the most random.
All right. And finally, what's the most ridiculous reason you've ever heard personally or read or someone told you about regarding why a company did not want to provide their part-time 1099 hourly employees benefits?
Because they're worthless millennials.
Wow. There we go. Definitely going to put that in the show notes.
Yeah. That was, what's funny about that is I took this person completely around and back around, and we're enrolling their group with all those worthless millennials next month.
There you go. Clearly, you're good at your job.
Well, I think it's the thing that, from my standpoint, is you have to value people. And I value, all of our employees. I think you need to value all of your employees, part-time or not. You know, you need to understand where they come from. They're part-time for a reason. I get that. But just because they're part-time doesn't mean that, they're any worse than you or me. And so we need to, we need to make sure we take care of all of our people and develop them.
Words of wisdom from a very wise guy. Definitely take care of all your people for everyone out there is listening. Shane, thank you so much for being a great guest and for making us all smarter about this topic.
All right. Thanks Bruce. Really appreciate that. Woo!
Shane! Thank you.
Wow, that's a great send-off.
Nice. Where can people find you and Hooray online?
So www.hooray.healthcare.com, or you can find us at LinkedIn at Hooray, hashtag Hooray Health, H-O-O-R-A-Y Health.
Got it. And we'll definitely put that info in the show notes for anyone who wants to follow up with you or Hooray directly. So for all you listeners out there, I'm pretty sure you love this episode. Shane really dropped a lot of wisdom bombs on us all. And so if you really enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Also, if this is the first episode you've ever listened to, because you found us, you're a supporter of Shane, or you just really like this topic and you want to continue listening to other great episodes, then please download the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever other podcast player that you're using. And last but not least, HR and People Ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXEpodcasts.com.